All right.
Yeah, I guess we were getting into some real discussions about with this interest rate and how they do us. It's important. No one never teaches Black people about credit.
Mm-mm. They don't, because this is the thing. Look at it from a different perspective. Be objective and look at it from their perspective. If you constantly, just winning on a person, taking advantage of them, you charging them above 24% interest rate, to probably 30% interest rate on a car. And these people steady doing it. These people going and buying, these Dodge Challengers or Chargers, and their credit might be in the fives, and they might have to spend $600-$700 a month for 48 to 72 months. If you were the credit company, or if you were the dealer, you'd be happy to see them come, wouldn't you?
Well, I work for a certain corporation that deals with cars, and they're very happy to see them coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're very happy. And then, in the part that I work for, I see all kinds of interest rates. I see some with
0.01. Mm-hmm.
And I see the one that come up with a Daquanda Shay Shay Williams is 24.6. And you like, wow, do they ever just really sit down and think about, is it worth really getting this car paying this much? Because at the end of the day, you're actually paying two cars for the price of one.
And you upside down. So think about it like this. When you ride in that car for probably about 4 years, because in order to pay that car off, you're going to end up paying eight if you ain't knocking down the principal. When you get to that fourth year, you already got the car. It was 3-4 years old. That car old now. Knowing Daquanda or whomever that you call, they ain't gonna do the proper maintenance on it. They gonna wreck it a little bit because they ain't gonna keep no insurance. They ain't gonna have no registration on it. So they gonna be ready to get rid of the car when the next model come out. They ain't gonna be able to get rid of it. So what they gonna end up doing is doing a repo on it. They gonna say, well, I ain't gonna pay the note. I'm just gonna go and give me another. And then they back in the cycle again, and it's another hit on their credit. So after that 7 years passed, where it could have dropped off their credit or whatever, it's still going to be another one on there.
Because they never sit down to read the fine print. Mm-hmm. I always tell my son, and I know that he knows everything because he's 21 years old, and he knows everything. I always tell him, son, whatever you do, read the fine print and everything. I don't care if they put it in your face and say, hey, I'm here, this is a great deal. No, you read every line. You read everything and read exactly what this contract is stating and why is it stating this. That's why I always say that in order for us to get back to what we truly are as people, we need to go back and read. We need to read. There's a book called The Richest Man in Babylon. Great read, great read. And I'm like, wow. The process in writing that book and the knowledge that he gives. And I'm like, and I tell people, have you read The Richest Man in Babylon? And they're like, well, who is that? And what is it about? And you go into detail, I think about it. The richest man in Babylon. What is Babylon? Babylon, think about it. It's by Samuel Clayson. I think I'm pronouncing his name right. Samuel Clayson. And, it's a great read. And this book happened. This book was written in 1926. The book was written in 1926. So it's just like people from yesteryears are giving us knowledge of what to come. But no one wants to sit down and read the book. They only glorify what's on the internet and what their homeboys and what their girls are telling them to do.
That's right. Because, if you look at it, they've always been fools, right? But now it's just more magnified. You got social media. Then also you have to look at it like this. Times have changed to a point where, like I say, the old values are no longer here. So And you have to look at it with inflation, with additional opportunity. People have more money to play with, therefore they're going to make more mistakes, right?
Right.
So when you look at it, you look at it like this. More people now than ever have went to college. More people than ever been before are earning more. But yet, people are still in debt.
They're still broke.
Why is that?
Because
I'll tell you the reason. The reason is there's a dream or a lifestyle that's being perpetuated through our social media, TV, and all that. You're being programmed to believe that if you are anybody of any substance or any value, you got to have a certain car. You got to have this outfit. You got to have this type of shoe. You got to have this type of house. You got to eat at a certain restaurant to have a certain level of status. So when you mentioned Kevin Samuel, you wasn't too far off. Even though he talked about relationships, women, and all this, he talks about being a high-value man, and you'll think about his mental aspect or his approach when dealing with the average man. So with the average man, he scolds a lot. He say, date in your station.
Meaning, date on your level.
That's right. And see, a lot of people don't. See, it's a lot of dudes that may not have a financial situation together, but then they go after the woman that want to achieve that dream. Therefore, they be a young man with principles. And they end up being an old man with debt.
Chasing the illusion. We always, like I said, Mr. Yates and I, we have this dialogue and we always talk. And, you know, and he always say, you're very wise and you're very invested. I said, well, a long time ago when I first got into the banking industry, when I was like 20 years old, I had a friend named Antoinette Johnson, and she's still my friend. And she said, baby, I'm going to tell you something. She said, whatever you do, make sure you invest in your savings. I, coming from Fifth Ward, never heard of a 401k, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, what is that? And she broke it down to me. She broke the logistics down and to let me know exactly how should I, what should I do, the amount I should put in. And she also talked to me about stock. Now, this was back in 2003. Here it is, 2021. And I always thank her for her advice that she gave me. A younger woman, she took under her wing and she told me about investment and how to save money and how to make sure you have what you need when you need it. You never have to compete with anyone. So whenever I buy something, it's because I want to. And it's not because somebody else has it. It's because I want to. And it was something that I felt that I earned. I desired to earn it. I'm not out here trying to compete with anyone. Even much with these people with these superficial marriages and these superficial houses and these superficial cars. I was telling a good girlfriend of mine, when they go home, you don't know what Mr. and Mrs. Superficial are fighting about. Because the illusion is they want everyone to think that they got.
That's
and
right.
That image is, I tell people we're living in Babylon. Do you think we're living in Babylon? I feel we're in this modern day Babylon.
But it always been. It always been.
It has gotten, it's to a place where it's like a sunken place, right? It's like the world is sinking into this one big hole and you only have a few people trying to build something around it to keep everyone afloat, and no one is listening to the people that's trying to build it around and lift it up. Everyone wants to get in that hole. A sunken place is a horrible place to be without knowledge and wisdom to surface through this whirlwind we call life.
You already know what that is, because see, the people, okay, so ever since I've been living, they've been saying we've been living in the time of Revelation.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's even more prevalent today. It always been this way. So it always been this way through these generations that we done lived in. So all it is now is just being, it's just being magnified. You see it magnified now because there's so many ways to view it. You can look at social media and everything is moving quickly. You can see everybody's movement at any given time. Whereas probably about 30 years ago, you wouldn't. Unless, you know what I'm saying, you talked to somebody or was out in the street and seen it. Now you don't even have to leave your house to know everything that's going on. So that news is readily available. All I'm saying is, look, if we want to change the culture, we have to make a drastic change. It has to be a drastic change. It's not going to be overnight.
Rome wasn't built overnight.
Right. And we're going to have the proper leadership. And the problem with Black culture, we don't want leaders anymore. We've already shut down the aspect of having a preacher be a leader. We try to lean toward our entertainers being leaders, but when they step up to do anything, we find the fault in their ways. So you don't believe in the politician, so who's going to be there? Who you going to believe in? In my opinion, the only person that could possibly be a leader at this point is probably a sports person.
Like LeBron James, you don't say?
But they hate on him so much, who knows?
You know, the way that he takes, he's a reader. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always followed Dr. Dick Gregory, Baba Gregory, and a lot of people, you know, they were like Dick Gregory, the comedian. No, Dick Gregory, the civil rights leader. Dick Gregory, the praying warrior. Dick Gregory, the prophecy. He stated best one day, I was listening to one of his conversations, and he stated, fear and God do not occupy the same building. Once you eliminate fear, you have God in you, and everything you need is right inside of you. And he said the most powerful woman on this earth is a Black woman. Because they will pray their way through it. But he said, he also stated, she can't do it on her own. She can't do it on her own. That leadership role comes in. That's when the man steps up and do what he's supposed to do as a man and take on that leadership role. And a lot of women won't allow a man to be a man because they're so used to being strong women. And then when a man comes along who actually have leadership potential, they run away because they're so used to being in control.
But the way I look at it is like this. If you're the right type of man, it don't matter what a woman accustomed to. A woman will submit when she see that real man.
When it's leadership, the leader is leading properly. See, and the only way that I will submit to a man, and Ken, you know me personally, and you know I don't sugarcoat anything. You know, I'm not dating anyone. A man has to lead by example. He has to lead by example. He has to lead with integrity and respect and be authentic with himself. I always tell people, you cannot be right if you're not right within yourself. Do you agree with that?
That's true. And I talk about that a lot. I talk about where it's a process of self-evaluation, right? Most people, what they'll never tell you is that they have a level of self-doubt. Most people have anxiety, depression. Some people are still broken from past relationships. Maybe mm-hmm. things that happened in their childhood. You know, it'd be things that really just traumatize people for years. Sometimes it's in the subconscious too. Like if, let's just say, you got a very dark-skinned man, and you know mm-hmm. how colorism is in the Black community.
Yeah.
So he was dark, and he probably wasn't that handsome, but he was a hard worker. He always was a good person, and he tried. When he was growing up, they called him Blackie, you know, ugly, you know, monkey man, or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
He laughed it off. But in the back, he probably heard about it, right?
Right.
Then when he, you know, he tried to get with women, you know, women diss him, you know what I'm saying? This, that, no. Then if he reaches a certain level of success and people know his success and women start to flock to him because they see his success and they want to be a part of the reaping of that success or the reaping of that seed that he didn't sow, he might start to have a complex, right? Like, he know these people ain't really dying for him, so he started dogging everybody. But then it may be one woman that really be want to be dying with him for real.
And he dogs her.
Right, because it's all about how he was treated before, and that's in his subconscious. You see, so until people really solve the problem for themselves, like do self-evaluation, that's the only way that you're going to be able to grow and you're really going to be at true peace. See, I tell my story. See, everybody know I used to be 350. I'm a big nigga. Excuse my language. I know you don't like to cuss on your platform.
No, you can. You can. This is open. This is us. This is you. This is I. This is brother. This is sister. We talk.
So, you know, all the time, you know, when I was growing up, you know, see, I was bigger, but I would fly. You know, yeah.
You've always been a well-dresser.
But that was a cover up because, see, you know, if you had something wrong with you when you were growing up, like if you had an attribute that people didn't like, you had to figure out a way to cover that up so you would gain that acceptance. So for me, it was being fly and being funny and being, you know, just the dude, you know, trying to figure out a way to be the dude. So, you know, over time, you do this here that you go through certain situations. On the inside, you might be a really good person, but on the outside, you have to portray something as a defense mechanism. A defense mechanism. So after years of doing self-evaluation, I finally reached the point where I found somebody that was on my level mentally. I almost ran her off. But then we got it right, got married. And then after that, you know, the only reason why I'm the size I am now is because I was going through health issues where I thought I was going to die, and I had to lose the weight. But see, now, since I done lost the weight, it's a lot of attention now, but I'm oblivious to it because I already felt like I'm that dude anyway.
Yeah, but before the weight, I always tell people, you know, Ken, remember when we were in school, I was skinny. I was flat chested. I didn't have no thighs. I didn't have any of that. None of that. And you know, to hide that, I always had a smart mouth. Because you know, you get tired of being saying, you know, being called flat chested, or you must not be all the way black because you got long hair. Crazy shit. Crazy things that make you sit back and reflect as a child, like, wow, why would people say this? And they look like me and they're coming from me and we grew up in the same neighborhood and we're from the same environment. Why would you down your brother? Why would you down your sister? I always tell people therapy is a lifesaver. It helps. Do you agree? It helps you tackle things that you didn't want to tackle. It helps you to confront the issues that you bury deep down inside.
I believe in therapy. I actually went through therapy a portion of this year. And it was for me to get to this, you know, I was able to resolve most of what I went through. But see, what you have to understand, too, as another facet, for gentlemen of my age that come from my background, we have survivor's remorse. There's a lot of people I grew up with that didn't make it. That may be in jail, that may have died. A person could feel jubilation from making it from that point to where they are now, seeing success, but at the same time, they feel like, are they worthy of it? So there's a lot of actions that happen after that too. Like I told somebody on my, I had a show called Celebrate. And I told them, you have to be careful what you're celebrating. When you start to drink, you might have one drink. You celebrate. Yeah, you want to sip by champagne. Woo-woo. But when you start going to get bottles of liquor, mm-hmm. and you post it up, you drinking bottles in the, and you in a section and you just drinking beyond your limit. Yeah. What you drinking for? You drinking for failure, or are you drinking to cover up something that's hurting on the inside? Like something that's going to make you feel better. Alcohol ain't the answer. So a lot of us go towards like alcohol, drugs, and this, that, and the other. It may be your subconscious playing games with you because you may be going through a certain level of pain that may be in your subconscious that may be burrowed in. That's why we have to, number one, we don't have all the answers.
No.
You could speak to a friend, you could speak to your kinfolk or whatever, but they may not be versed because they may be in the same matrix too. You got to find somebody that's not biased, preferably through counseling, impartial person that has an open ear, and you can talk to them, and they can unravel an onion for you.
And they won't tell you what you want to hear, but they'll tell you the honest truth about yourself. I remember when my mother passed away, right? Mm-hmm. My mother died August 19th, 2014. I never felt that type of grief a day in my life. I never imagined at 35 years old that I would be losing my mother. And, you know, during that time, I had just got my dream job at Hess, the oil and gas company. I was a manager there. I was so happy. I just got that job. That was my dream job. And one day the Holy Spirit said, it's time to leave. So I quit. My mother ended up going into the hospital, being diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. Mm-hmm. And it's taboo for Black people to see a therapist or a shrink because they're, what you seeing that for? Something wrong with you? Are you crazy or something? No, you need to talk to somebody to help you sort out these issues that you're having dealing with losing someone and losing, you know, losing a key fixture in your life. And, you know, my mother was a key fixture in my life, and I love my mother. So I had to seek therapy. One, because I started to drink. And at that time, I was not a drinker. I never did drink. I didn't start drinking until my mother died. So every weekend, I would have parties. I would invite my girls over to my house, and we would have drinks, and I would cook food, and we would do this, and we'll do that. And my cousin Erica was like, this is not you, Nisha. And I'm sitting up there at the table crying. I'm like, I know it isn't me, but how do I handle this? And I said, you know what? I need to see someone. I need to talk to someone. Because feeling inside the void of the loneliness, how can I get hurt of losing someone? So I had to seek counseling. And I always tell people, therapy helps. God knows when I get married again, my husband and I, before we say I do, we're going to say, let's go to a counselor. Let's talk. Because it's going to be some things that you need to open up about. It's going to be some things I need to open up about. I don't want your past to interfere. I don't want my past to interfere. I want us to be able to talk and have an open dialogue because, you know, a marriage is a partnership and you... And you gotta have therapy. You gotta have that. You're right. It's a must. We must share that. People, for one, don't believe in therapy. Do you understand that? Have you ever understood why some don't believe in it?
But see, this is the hat trick, though. Black people do believe in it. They just distrustful of the doctor. See, what most Negroes do, they go tell their business to their best friend. Their best friend most times act as the therapist or counselor. But see, what they missing is the hat trick to this whole thing. They don't have HIPAA regulations on best friends, so best friends don't spread your business.
And tell them all.
Yeah, and also they're going to cast judgment on you. But if you go to a therapist not going to cast judgment on you. You're going to be impartial. And your business not going nowhere because that's behind HIPAA regulation. They can't talk and they can't tell nobody. So that's your safeguard. So you could be as free as you want to be. You see what I'm saying? But most times people also get thrown out from it because, hey, be real about it, there is a healthcare insurance issue within the Black community. Most people don't have insurance, or they may not be literate enough to know if they do have the insurance, what could be covered, and how can they seek out these providers that give this type of assistance.
You know, I can honestly say at the company I work for, it's once a month, they always send out these emails regarding mental health. Once a month. And they'll tell you, hey, this is where you need to go. If you are having problems or doubts about something, here's a link where you can make an appointment, blase, blase, blase. I think that we should have that in the Black community. Once a month, a therapist should, an African-American therapist or therapist need to come and sit down and talk to children and the parents so they can have a better understanding about life and the problems that we face as a whole. But, you know, I'm an overthinker. What do I know?
So, actually, a friend of mine, she's a poet and a comedian. She has this thing every 2 weeks. It's called a healing bash, and she has different themes.
Mm-hmm.
So Sunday I went to it, and basically it was healing for the Black man.
Mm.
So she said, this is a no-judgment zone. You can get on stage. You can tell your truth. So I went, you know, I had went to one of my cousin's graduations, then I had went up there. And me and my wife, you know, we were supporting my homegirl, but then I was like, you know, I feel compelled to say something. She had a live band, and, you know, she was giving her testimony through poetry. There were many people that were going through poetry. She was telling jokes. So I went up there, I told a few jokes. And next thing you know, I did a 15-minute set, but the set was basically like a testimony and also giving game. And after that, I just felt, you know, I just felt so relieved. You see what I'm saying? So those type of events, like, I mean, if you seek, you shall find. There are places where we can go in the Black community where we can have that release and not be judged.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why I chose comedy. Because I'm able to tell things that people, okay, only people that know me would know that most of the things I see is true.
Right.
Most people would think that I'm exaggerating.
But they got to know you to know the truth.
Right. So I'm releasing. You know, all I'm doing when I tell these jokes, I'm releasing. And that's just been like an avenue or mechanism for me to get that type of release. So, I mean, it's up to the person, however they want to find their outlet. But I also endorse. If you want to see therapy, go ahead and do it. If you feel shame, don't feel shame. At the end of the day, you're doing this for you. You're not doing this for the acceptance of nobody else. You seeking the acceptance of everybody else is the reason why you got into a bad situation anyway. Because you was covering up that hurt and you want to be normal. You know, but what you're not realizing is hurt is normal.
Yeah, and it's okay to cry. My outlet, I'm a writer. And, you know, the other day I wrote some poetry under one of my pictures, and I had some guy ask me, was I a rapper? Because he wanted to produce me. I said, sir, I am 42 years old. I am not a rapper. I'm a poet and I'm a writer. Those rhymes were very good. I'm like, sir, have a wonderful day. I'm 42 years old. I mean, I was flattered, but writing helps. I'm a firm believer of being who I am. I always tell people, take me as I am. I have nothing at all. I don't put on any airs about me. What you see is what you get with me. I'm authentic. And when I say I am who I am, I am who I am. I don't pretend to be something I'm not. And that's what I love about you, my brother. You and I, we're ahead of the class in that, being who we are, and we're honest about our trials and tribulations. You know, I struggled with depression after my mother died. You know, I struggled so bad to where I didn't want to live anymore. I didn't, but if it wasn't for that counselor that I had to help me, I wouldn't be here today. Because, you know, imagine going into your home in your daughter's room where your mother is having her hospice care, and she's dead, and you find her body. You check her vitals, and she's gone. That does something to you.
And that happened to me. So this story here, I care for my father. My daddy was with my mama all the way up through high school. My daddy used to drink a lot. My daddy be in the hood and everything. You probably know him if I show you a picture. Anyway, he had a open heart surgery in 96. And then he lived for a little while. He ended up going to hospice in 2000. God saved him again. By 2014, they said that he was losing heart function. He was in the hospital. We were trying to save him. I was going to try to hustle to go get him a heart transplant. His family voted me down. So he said he was ready to go. So he put him in hospice. So it was Easter 2014. Early that morning, I get a call. I was on my way up there because me and my sister, I have a sister that's in the middle. She went to Barbara Jordan. I take the morning, she'll take the night. I go up there that morning. Right when I hit the door, they told me he died. When I walk in there, they had coffee grounds under the bed and his mouth was wide open. I had to sit there till Mr. Mitchell came got him. So I ain't sleep none of that day. He already had his funeral arrangements together. We buried him. We got everything together. We buried him. But I ain't been the same ever since.
No, you don't. I always tell people that changes you, especially when it's someone that you truly cared and loved. You know, like I said, my mother raised my sister and I by herself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I haven't been the same, you know, and I'm not a jealous person. The only time I get jealous is around Mother's Day when I see people with their mothers. And I often wonder, how would I be with my mother today in this time climax, in this time change? How would I be with my mother? So, yeah, you know, it, and then, you know, I don't have any older relatives. Like, my grandmother passed away last July, 2 days before her funeral. My aunt passed away. So that was it. And then the year prior, my dear and my other aunt passed away. So that was it. Hmm. So it's just us now. And, you know, being the strong one, even though I'm strong and I'm there for everyone, I still got to have that time to talk to someone, to open up about how I feel. Because if you don't take the time out for yourself, you'll fail.
Yeah. And then also I came to a realization, because, I mean, I love so many people. I know you remember Book, we from the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And my big bro. He died all of a sudden. Then my cousin Casey, he got murdered. I talked to him 20 minutes before he got murdered. He was supposed to come on Coke Street, but he didn't make it. Then one of the brothers, one of my brother Mo, he was my best man, my partner since high school. Me and a whole clique of my partners, we found him dead in the house probably about 2 years ago. He had been dead since that Wednesday. We found him that Saturday. So, you know, I've encountered death so much to where I'm numb to it. Mm-hmm. Things that's supposed to make me cry, don't cry. Things that I want to go see, like normally people would say, hey, you need to go to the funeral. I'm not going. What for? I want to remember people when they were in their element. I want to remember people for the smile they had, the times we had, or whatever, because it's all a memory at that point. There is no reason for me to mourn that way. I lost a partner of mine this week. And another partner of mine called me today, and he was like, do you know what happened? You going to go to the funeral? I said, no, sir.
You become, like you said, when it comes to funerals and things like that, and you have my deepest condolences of the loss of your friend. I lost a good friend of mine last month. He was truly a friend of mine. And the day he died, he called me, and he kept calling me and saying, say, girl, with your little ugly self, I love you. Do you love me? I'm like, yeah, I love you. You're my friend. I know you love me, but I love you, man. You need to come out here. And because, you know, he was a real hood dude. You need to come out here and get some food. I said, I don't want to deal with your drama of you and your girlfriend. Y'all going to be acting crazy. Y'all drama. I said, you just love drama. He said, man, I'm about to go because you talking about we love drama. I said, yeah, you do. You like drama. You too old for drama. He was like, nah, man, for real. Come out. Come out and come hang with your boy. Y'all come on out. That day he died.
You talking about Frank from the South Side?
Yes, Will. Will Frank. Mm-hmm. That's
yeah.
Yep. That boy was my friend. And you know, he would call me all times of night talking stuff. He always say, with your little ugly self, you ugly. I'm like, no, you ugly. Then he'll say, you know, I'm just playing, you pretty, but you ugly with your bougie self. And, you know, it's just that's who he was. And if you know Will, you know Will was just crazy.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's the funny thing about it. Like, when that's why, you know, I can't really just get wrapped up into it no more. Because, I mean, I know everybody got their time to go. You know what I'm saying? That's why I'm kind of distant, kind of really standoffish. Like, I really be want to get close to people, but I can't.
Because you don't want to feel that loss of emptiness anymore. I understand.
Exactly.
Oh, trust me, I understand.
Yeah. Exactly. Because you know, you got to look at it like this. I had to. Because at a certain point in time, in the 2000s, every 3 months, somebody I knew was dying. And then the 90s, oh boy, people were dying left and right.
Yeah.
I had a partner. He was over there by Gulf Coast. He got into it with somebody, and they shot him in the head at the stove.
Lord. Yep. But you know, that's a part of life you live. You know, Pimp C said it best. One day you here, the next day you gone. You just never know. That's why I love everyone today. Like today is my last day. And I always want to be remembered for my kindness of love, hope, and peace and joy. But yes, sir. Well, my brother, it was amazing having you here. Talking with you, you know, we had a topic tonight because it was some things that needed to be said. Open up dialogue about our people, how it is to have therapy. And
but I definitely appreciate it. It's very rare that I get the opportunity for someone to interview or have a diatribe with me. I'm always the person on the other side of the chair asking questions and trying to probe them. So I definitely appreciate the opportunity. And you know, as always, sister, you anytime you need me, I'm there.
Just like you. Anytime you need me, I'm there. And you just let me know when this book signing is, and I'll be right there.
Right. And also, you know, this is the second season of Worldviews with Ken Mills on Boston Houston Network.
That's after, right.
After this year, after this season, we're going to go a totally different way. The inception of the show was during the pandemic. We're coming out of the pandemic. So now we have to embrace the topics and the situations at hand. Our mission statement is still the same. We hit to uplift the Black community. But at this time, I think before we gave that soft love.
Mm-hmm.
But like my mama say, hard head make a soft ass.
Yep.
So now it's time to get that tough love. So they're going to see another side of me. They're going to see, they used to call me Big Gucci. So they're going to see Fifth Ward.
Fifth Ward coming out.
Right. And we're going to come with force. So, and that's on every platform that I have, whether it's comedy on stage, or it's going to be anything terrestrial with the content creation. It's going to be very aggressive. And the reason for that is now we open And I feel like people done softened up. Now the time is not the time to soften up. Now the time is to strengthen. So just like Freeway say, it's a cold world. We need to bundle up. So I'm ready to prepare our people.
Exactly. And you also, we also need to prepare our people with knowledge and wisdom. Please don't be afraid to open up a book and find the truth. It's in there. Everything you ever need is in a book. But you got to do your research.
But what I found, Nisha, and I ain't going to hold you long, what I found is people already know the truth. But the thing is, it's an instinct that we have. Most people think it's a gut feeling. Some women think it's an intuition. You already know what the truth is. Uh-huh. It's just that your flesh or your carnal nature don't want you to address and follow the truth. You want to follow the easy path, the complacent path. You want to do the wrong. So if you look at it, most of the things that we go through are self-inflicted.
Indeed. You know, I always tell people, if you sit still long enough, I'm talking country like my grandmother. If you sit still long enough, the universe will teach you. But you got to be willing to learn.
That's right.
Well, my brother, I shall see you on the upside.
All right.
It's always a pleasure having you on here. Next time we'll be on a lighter note, give some comedy to the people, because, you know, they're still laughing about that last interview.
And I'm ready to tell that story, too.
Yes, you need. He going to come back with. Can you tell them that you will be back with part two? Because they're always asking me. So when he going to tell about the. With the girl in the getting caught up at the house, that girl robbing people and all this other crazy stuff. Like, he'll be back on to tell the story. He's coming back on. We have different topics for different things, but he'll be back on.
Most definitely.
Cause I laughed.
And to Nisha's audience, I love y'all. Thank y'all for supporting her. And continue to support. Y'all need to tell a friend and bring a friend to her podcast, because it's always some beneficial information that's being shared. Because I promise you, every time I listen to it, I come back with some more knowledge, and I help feed the people with that knowledge.
Thank you, my brother. And always, like I say, follow my brother on his all his platforms. Tell him again, worldwide. Right. I like when you say it.
All right, World of Comedy 5 on IG, World of Comedy 5 Entertainment on IG, or you could just follow me at Ken Mills. If you friend me on Ken Mills, I promise you, you'll be able to follow my journey. I don't bore nothing. I tell you exactly what's going on, and you'll see the growth. Hopefully, it'll inspire somebody. And if anybody want to chat, like if you're going through something, I don't mind talking to you. If you just need an ear, I don't need to know you and know your business, but I can give you an objective perspective on what you're going through.
Amen. As always, my brother, I wish you love, peace, and joy on your goings in and coming out, as well as your beautiful wife, for being a constant fixture in my life. You pouring into me as I pour into you. Together we can save our community. Many blessings.
Amen. Love you.
I love you as well. Good night.